Well, welcome to this talk about a couple of things: sustainability, biomimicry, technology. Any beekeepers in the room? All right. Carl can keep me honest here with my bee facts. I am as well, although it's been a couple of years. My name is Mike Dungan. I am the co-founder of Bee Dance. We are based in northeastern Ohio, started in Cleveland. And I just want to acknowledge my partners here today, Christy Gray, who is our chief story officer, co-founder of Bee Dance, and Colin Toke, who is our development. He is the development team doing our behind-the-scenes work. Thank you for coming today. We're going to cover, as I said, a lot of ground, but I just wanted to frame the entire presentation by saying this was the original question that we asked ourselves in 2005, actually, when we started this work. We started this work in Cleveland, Ohio, and the question was, in the construction industry at the time, the industry Christy and I came out of, is where does it go? And by it, we mean the stuff from the construction industry. And we found in the construction industry, a lot of things were used once, very linear process, and then disposed of. And this was the answer we repeatedly heard when we asked the question, where does it go? It's either thrown away, or it's recycled, or we pretend to recycle. This is not a presentation that really takes on the waste industry, the recycling industry. That's a different presentation that I'll be happy to give another time. But it really helps to hold a mirror up to how we do things now, especially how we manage materials and some of the things that we create, whether it's economic distress, social distress, or environmental distress. So as the community told us in Northeast Ohio, we don't care. We think this is happening. We rolled up our sleeves and got busy. We began to divert items from the waste stream generated by the construction industry, primarily architects, interior designers, specifiers of materials, and found an amazing thing happening that was really powered by social media, but had some underpinnings as well. It was a matter of collaborating with our partners in the community, so we were able to bring together artists, art teachers and educators, crafters, and connect them directly to waste streams that were created by architects, interior designers. And that's a project called Zero Landfill. If you Google Zero Landfill or just set up that hashtag on Twitter, you'll see our work happening in 25 cities in the U.S. It also became apparent as the aughts wore down and we got into the teens of 2000, that we could merge three things effectively: technology, biology, and sustainability, and do it very simply in a very efficient manner. And that was by using an organizing framework known as biomimicry. This is the third year that biomimicry has been presented at South by Southwest that I'm aware of. I was part of a panel last year, and Valerie Casey from Designers Accord was a keynote speaker 2 years ago. Anybody here attend Val's keynote or our panel last year? Yeah? Great. The function of biomimicry, it's really an organizing principle as a design strategy. And it takes a look at nature's inspiration, nature's lessons, and applies it to a human-centered problem. And for that to work, you really have to take your question that you're struggling with and biologize it. And in our case, we biologize the main question, where does it go, with a response looking at the biomimetic framework that said, what if one of the most efficient organisms in nature was able to reorganize the waste stream? And we looked at honeybees. Honeybees are extremely efficient. They work with materials every day. That's their livelihood. So as a 20-plus year member of the beekeeping practice, as a hobbyist, I married into a family of beekeepers, I started to see a lot of parallels. And we came away with this idea that using social media, we could ask the question, where does it go, and begin to show people in a disruptive yet informative manner what happens. So Zero Landfill was born as an organizing framework. And it really came down to two things. We're all here at South by Southwest, 20,000-plus people, to talk about two things this week. It's really storytelling and data. And in our case, how do we take storytelling and not lose sight of data and data aggregation? Or how do we perform sophisticated data aggregation and analysis without losing sight of the storytelling? And we were able to put together an idea that allows us to do this in the cloud as well as in our hands. At Zero Landfill Projects, we touch everything. We're closing in on 1 million pounds of items repurposed over 4 years in 25 cities in the U.S., all with volunteers, and those materials all pass through our volunteers' hands, away from the waste stream, into the hands of artists, crafters, and teachers. So our idea was to take it to the next level and design something that could be mobile, something that could be taken with, something that's easily accessible. And we've taken the step of forming a platform for innovation. So BDance has many things. In the video at the beginning, we do consulting work, but we also are able to listen using biomimicry as our design framework or design strategy and come away with solutions that can help address a question, mainly in waste stream practices or recycling or use of materials, but also branching out into other areas. So as we began to design the BDance meme and look at how we can innovate disruptively, we identified probably 30 different inspirations from honeybee culture, honeybee world, through research, the literature, talking with beekeepers, my own practical experience. I'm not a scientist, but I've had my hands around bees for a long time, and my father-in-law, who is my Yoda for beekeeping, has been doing this for over 60 years. So I had a lot of good resources to turn to right in my backyard, as a matter of fact. We took that 30 or so list of lessons or learnings or teachings of honeybees and distilled it down to 9. Now, somebody needs to keep track of the time because I'm going to give you 9 lessons of honeybees in 9 minutes. This is the first time I've done this live, as a matter of fact. I've been doing this for a couple of years, but not in this fashion. So somebody say go. Go. Lesson number 1. Well, here's the 9 lessons, just to frame it up for you. We'll get into each of them specifically, but this is our experiential set, and we feel that the web, interactivity, social media, e-commerce, taking a page out of nature and looking at a design strategy that basically steals R&D that's been going on for millions of years. It's free. It's not copyrighted or trademarked. Nature doesn't patent. We just have to pay attention. So here's our 9, and let me go through them one at a time and just share some bee knowledge with you. Think about how this could apply to the work you're doing in technology, IT, whatever you bring into the room today. Lesson number 1, this is very important. This is where the location-based, proximity-based applications have been heading for a couple of years. Honeybees work on a hyperlocal basis, which is probably the essence of BDance. We work on a very hyperlocal, down to the city block basis. We know that the blue sky says change the world, but we have to get busy where we live as part of our obligation for placemaking to really have an impact. So why is this important as a lesson? Because honeybees, they carry materials 3 different ways. They have pollen sacs, as you see on their legs. They collect pollen, put it in their legs, fly away. They ingest pollen and nectar into their stomach. And they also create static electricity when they fly with the hairs on their body, and pollen granules stick to their hairs on their body. So the number 1 cause of mortality for honeybees is a function of this rule. Their wings wear out. Bees really should not be able to fly the way they're engineered. In fact, science has really struggled with this problem for years. How do bees fly? Because their abdomens are shaped a certain way. They're very heavy, or top heavy, and their wings are under-engineered. They're very fragile. Bees really, you hear a lot about colony collapse disorder. You hear a lot about the threats to honeybees. Their number 1 threat is their wings fail, and they either die from the impact or they die from exposure being left out of the colony. So they have to be very high proficient with how they manage their resources. So they only work on a hyperlocal basis, flying 30 to 50 meters. Rule number 2, the rules of attraction. I wish South by Southwest would pay more attention to this as a body, because we're all exposed to the rule of influence. I don't know how many things I was handed walking 6 blocks from the parking deck to get my badge today. But really, the rules of our attraction are what make honeybees hyper-efficient. They see using UV light with complex eyes. Their antennas are finely tuned to sense different things going on around them. That is a picture of a flower using a UV filter. And that's how bees see resources as they're traveling. They fly very fast. And they see with their complex eyes the strength and of a nectar flow. How recent is it? How powerful or how strong is it? From a carbohydrate standpoint, and they're able to zoom in as they travel across the field and see where the richest resources are closest to the hive and get busy, whether it's pollen or nectar that they're seeking. So rules of attraction are extremely important in honeybee world, and we feel in web world it is too, as BDance is working on. Number three, they imprint and share knowledge. They're extremely, to borrow from a future rule you'll see in a minute, generous. They see something, they remember it, they come back, and they share. That's the bee dance is an actual phenomenon, which is why we named the company as in honor of the honeybee. The bee dance is a recognized, validated phenomenon that really shows the location of resources to their hive mates. When they sense something, they discover something, whether it's food, water, or shelter, they come back to the hive, the scout bees do, and in complete darkness inside the hive, they do a figure eight dance. And that figure eight dance, you can see this on YouTube, just go to YouTube and search bee dance or waggle dance. You'll see a figure eight dance performed that, based on its angle, its duration, and its speed, and its shape, tells bees exactly their counterparts within the hive where that resource is located. It's a vectoring system. And it's been proven to be accurate within a meter that the location of a new blooming flower or a pumpkin patch or a source of water, as this bee dance is done inside the hive, other bees, they do caucus voting. They tend to group up and see if this guy's really telling the truth that's doing the waggle dance. And if enough bees agree through a form of voting or polling, they all go and they get the resource. So they imprint and they share knowledge very quickly as a matter of survival. And this leads to the next rule. They're very precise. And this is the vectoring. As they discover a new resource, the flower on the left, come back and do the waggle dance or the bee dance, it communicates the angle of that, the position of that resource in relationship to the sun and the hive, and that is how they can find things so fast and so efficiently. Science isn't really sure why they do this or how they do this. They just do it. And it was discovered in the 1800s, and it's been well documented that it's extremely precise, exact, and it's how the hive and the colony continue to grow and thrive in a changing environment. Rule number five, replication of best practices. If it works, keep doing it. If it doesn't work, move on. Why change things that are working? And in replicating best practices as they transmit knowledge, you'll see there the honeycomb and the worker bees inside or the comb. Honeycombs retain a very distinct shape and a very distinct pattern over and over because they have always done it that way. So if you imagine, the one thing that really affects honeycomb design is gravity. Honeycombs are built on the vertical in most cases. Gravity allows the material that the bees use, that they ingest and reproduce out of their stomachs, as beeswax and other things, to continue to create this shape using gravity. And it's similar to if you take a pane of glass and you stand it on the vertical and you drop soap, let soap bubbles slide down, they will stop and hit and create these shapes of six-sided shapes. And honeybees do the same exact principle in slow motion. As they build these structures on the vertical using gravity, it creates that shape, which is one of the strongest, most efficient shapes in nature. Buildings are now being designed after this principle, furniture, other things. So replicating best practice, that's one of many examples that bees have inspired us to do. This is my favorite, creating value for multiple systems. So bees go out and they go about their business. I think I'm over 9 minutes now. I'm almost done. They go out and go about their business looking for food, looking for water, looking for shelter. And in doing that, they create additional transactions in the environment. Not only are they taking care of their own by bringing back food, water, pollen, etc., beeswax materials, propolis, which is a construction material, it's gum from trees. They also do this little thing called pollination. Pollination is critical for nature to function in the natural world. It's critical for our food supply. And bees are responsible for up to a third, if not more, of the pollination that goes on every day in the wild as well as in monocultures. So creating value for multiple systems can look like pollinating apple orchards for us to grow apples to be used as food products. It can also look like bringing materials back to the comb to create honey for us to use, for bears to eat, for robber bees to come in and steal. They also create beeswax, which is used as a holistic agent or can be used in candles. The AI Root Company, the largest candle producer in the world, is in our backyard in northeastern Ohio, and the whole company was founded on this principle that additional value is being created by these critters that go out and do nothing but work like bees. So multiple systems, it's a key part of what we're doing at BeeDance. We don't want to build things for us. We want to build things for our audience and listen. Regeneration, regenerative practices and behaviors. If you are going to duplicate, really in nature, there's very little subtraction, if any, and very little division other than cell biology. Everything in nature is addition or multiplication if you look at the research. And honeybees are regenerative on a positive basis. As the queen who lives about two, maybe 3 years, as she gets older and her egg-laying production drops, the colony can sense it and basically either kick the queen out or the queen leaves on her own accord, but she takes bees with her. She just doesn't go away and die in most cases. How does this apply to social media? Maybe it applies to, in a way that you'll see next. Again, back to generosity and transparency. It's a very honest transaction that occurs in nature. And I think that's an important thing for the web to remember, for interactive technology to remember, that your motives are true and that you're doing something that takes into account all of these ideas, creating multiple value for multiple systems, but on a regenerative basis, so that if a decision is made to change, it is change for the positive. It is change for replication. It's change for improvement. So as the old queen leaves and takes bees with her, she finds a new place to set up shop, and they begin to rear new queens. The hive that was left behind already has a new queen in place that they have reared, and she has taken over in beginning the business of laying eggs and fledging new bees. Anybody know how many honeybees are in an average hive, the boxes that you see? I guess. Christy? 40,000? 30,000? 40,000? It's a lot of babies born in bee world. And I'm frozen here. Two more. Diversity. Honeybees thrive on diversity. Monocultures are not good. And our food supply and our food chain in the industrialized world has become a monoculture society or system where we grow all the almonds in one place. We grow all the orchards, fruits in one place. And bees are an important part of that supply chain. They are trucked in. Right now they're in California busy with the almond crop. That's really not healthy, and that's maybe one of the reasons bees are struggling health-wise, because they like diversity. They like the assignment of going into a place like you see here and using their amazing vision and antenna and sensory principles and communicating with the figure eight dance. They're able to tell where the most distinct nectar flow is, where the best shelter opportunities are if they're going to be fledging a new queen, as well as different varieties of nutrition that's out there. When you have a monoculture, like in an apple orchard or an industrialized vegetable setting, you lose that. You lose that a lot. So diversity is really how honey is made, through very diverse ingested materials in contact with the enzymes of a bee system to create honey. We'll get into that in a second. But diversity is really one of the most important aspects of our nine lessons, and it's something that we hold very close in our design. And finally, honeybees are generous. As I said, they create for multiple systems. As beekeepers, if you have a good nectar flow going, you just keep stacking on supers like you see this guy who the beekeeper is here, and they'll just keep making honeycomb and honey for you. They really don't stop. They're great toilers in the field. So there really is no limit to what they do, and we and others reap their generosity. So back to biomimicry and what this all means for social media and the work of BeeDance. In biomimicry, you do this thing called pairings. So if you have a challenge that you're trying to address, like server allocation strategies, how to create hyper-efficiency in servers, energy efficiency, building design, you look for your champion in nature and you create a pairing. And that pairing can be done through research. There's a process that the Biomimicry Institute in Missoula, Montana has copyrighted that is called the design spiral, where you go through phases of research, emulation, you try things. It's really a scientific method that allows you to land on that organism in nature. It could be a coral reef, it could be a mountain range, it could be a seed pod. But you end up with a pairing that pairs a solution from nature with a human-centered problem. And in our work, we have come up with two pairings, and they're actually pairings of bee characteristics. And the first one is known as inversion. We're developing an app right now that really focuses on how inversion works. What inversion really is, it's a very fancy scientific term for bee barf, because bees make honey by ingesting pollen or a nectar from wildflowers and trees. They take it into their stomach. They carry it back to the hive, and they regurgitate. Now, if you didn't think that was bad enough, they regurgitate it over and over into the abdomens of other bees. So they pass it along. And again, that diversity of feedstock in the nectar from a very diverse place across different DNA structures and bloodlines and enzymes within the abdomen of each bee, only to be packed away in a honeycomb cell, only to be fanned with the bee's wings to remove two-thirds of the water. That's how we get honey. So the next time you put honey in your tea, think about the process that teaspoonful of honey went through to get to your table. And that is a process of inversion. And it's creating new value or increasing value, not reducing value or not keeping it the same, but increasing value through a proprietary process. I'll share with you in a second some things that we have in development that are going to help service the recycling industry, mainly with plastics. The second pairing that has emerged is a very distinct characteristic of honeybees, and we saw some of it in the 9 lessons. Foraging. Bees look for things different than any other organism. Again, it's a matter of their complex eyes, their complex antenna structure, their ability to communicate and share efficiently. As well as what's going on in their microclimate, in their own little world. Others bypass the value that they partake of. And in the case of foraging, this has huge ramifications in search. Anybody here working in search, you really need to look at biomimicry. My prediction is biomimicry will be a part of South by Southwest, and we want to have more and more panels and people talking about it, because it is one of the simplest ways to solve problems. We just have to look out the window and rediscover our connection to the outdoors or what's under our feet or what's under the sea to get to these answers. So in the case of the foraging pairing, we're looking at search that emulates honeybee behavior exclusively. And it's really focused on the first 9 lessons that you saw. Hyperlocal basis, regenerative, creating multiple value. There's algorithms sitting in there. We have sketched out some of it on back of the envelope at the moment, but there are ways to connect and create additional value for the questions that are in the economy today. Again, our framework is from the waste industry, the construction industry, but you can apply these principles to a lot of other things. When you talk about waste, it doesn't have to be things in the trash. It can be wasted human potential. It can be wasted logistics, uptime questions. It can be more efficiency in our utility system, distribution system. There's different ways to look at how things are considered waste and how to look at an inversion process that increases value through a change or a foraging aspect that really copies some R&D that's been perfected for generations. So as these pairings have emerged for us, our proof of concept work with zero landfill projects across the country has been completed. We're close to 1 million pounds repurposed, as I said. In fact, Austin is going to be doing a zero landfill project in a month, next month. We have come away with these. I'll share these sketches with you because, A, they're hard to read, and my handwriting's horrible, so I had to type these in. But it's really a way in the inversion process where you're creating new value. You're not just doing the same old or distracting or taking away. It's really capture. So what is happening out there? What is the question? And that's your data in. And then there's a tabulation feature. And the tabulation can allow you to match. It can dump it off as an exception to be addressed. It can be captured from a geo basis, location basis, quality of material, the user profile itself. But as you'll see in a second, it's a very fast way to assign new value to an item that you thought maybe didn't have a chance of either being repurposed, reused, or diverted from the waste stream. You'll see more of this product. Hopefully next year, South by Southwest will be inverting a bunch of stuff here. And then the second one is forage. And again, it's looking at the characteristics of how bees can find the right stuff at the right time, which is a hallmark of search, the right answer at the right time for the right person, and looking at some of the research that's been done on forage behavior. The chart on the right is one of many in the literature that's out there that talks about how bees learn, as well as how they teach. So experiential basis, as foraging increases over a certain microclimate, the average rate of food delivery goes up, and it all has to do with how they imprint, how they seek, and what they do with that information. There's tons of data out there if this interests you. Google, I would say start with the Wikipedia page, as we all do, for honeybees, and go from there. You'll see the literature that's out there. So this is the core of the search piece that we're looking at. So here's what it means in the real world. Whether it's the inversion, creating new value through change, or foraging, emulating honeybee, how they find things. And the first case study that I'll share with you is a company called Polyflow. And what Polyflow is doing in northeastern Ohio is exactly what I just described. They're actually a customer of BeeDance's, and we're working on inverter and eventually forager applications. Polyflow takes type 1 through 7 plastic from the waste stream and converts it through their own inverter process, which is patented, and makes either transportation fuel or chemical intermediates, which are used in the petrochemical business. And what that means is, instead of throwing things away, let's take a look at the value that's present, and through a proprietary process, let's turn it into something that we need and use. And in the case of Polyflow, they're able to remove literally tankers of crude oil from the high seas as this technology scales up, simply by taking the plastic that goes to the landfill and converting it into transportation fuel locally. So imagine, you go to a landfill, you'll see a bunch of this kind of stuff. Toothbrushes. We have a very good system in place in the U.S. for recycling plastic. Everybody takes it to the curb, right? You separate it at home, you separate it at the office. Out of all the things that are separated plastic-wise, the only thing the recycling business is interested in is type 1s, which is water bottles, and type 2s, which is milk jugs and other types of plastic in those two characteristics. The 3 through 7s don't really have a home, because in most cases, 3 through 7 type plastic, the resin codes that are stamped on the bottoms of yogurt containers and butter tubs and toothbrushes and shrink wrap, there is no recycling process that can handle them, because complex polymers have to be separated to be efficiently repurposed. And this Tic Tac package is a good example. This is made up of two different types of plastic. And when this goes through a recycling center, it goes right into the bin that goes to the landfill, because nobody has time to pick this out. It's mainly a manual process. There is some technology. But the bigger problem is the type 5 plastic that's the lid, polypropylene, cannot be recycled with type 6 plastic, the polystyrene that makes up the body of this. So we have a big problem. We're doing things hyperlocally in our own homes and businesses, separating plastic, taking it to the curb, feeling good. But what really happens behind the scenes, very little of that actually gets recycled. And we're filling landfills with unbelievable amounts of high-quality plastics and polymers, and Polyflow is addressing that head-on by salvaging those materials, getting in between the waste stream, the generators, and the landfill operators, diverting those items, the 3s through 7s, and turning them into diesel and gasoline and other things locally, which takes away our need for foreign crude oil and natural gas. The inverter application is going to help Polyflow not only find goods in combination with the forager application. It's also going to report. And this is I'm calling this B2E, not B2B or B2C. It's not business to business or business to consumer. It's B to everybody. Using the inverter app, you're going to be able to type in, I have 16 yogurt tubs. How much diesel fuel can that create if it doesn't go into the landfill? Or I'm closing my store and I've got a ton of plastic displays. It's mountains of shrink wrap and a bunch of end caps and all kinds of things that are plastic based. Is there value to this? And the inverter app will say yes or no. And it will also quantitatively spit out the data that says, yes, and here's some people that are interested in it, Polyflow and others. And by the way, by taking this away from the dumpster out back, you have just put 700 barrels of crude oil back into the economy through these processes. So that's a quantitative look at how biomimicry and its application following a natural design framework and lessons, in this case, of the honeybee and other organisms as well, can make a true change in the economy. There's also a qualitative aspect to this work, the inverter app as well as the forager. I got a slow MacBook today. And that's the storytelling. Back to the storytelling. So we talked about data aggregation. How much diesel can you make out of that bin full of plastic? The qualitative aspect is simply the story. in this case, and we're using zero landfill as the example here, we have been able to go into a very interesting waste stream in the interior design and architectural and construction industry and teach participants in that industry that these items really aren't trash. Carpet books, fabric samples, laminate chips, any form of plastic, steel, or glass that you can imagine that comes in as specification samples for designers, such as the carpet in this room, the wall covering, the ceiling tiles, the light fixtures. These are all brand new products that were usually thrown away after they were evaluated if they weren't sent back to the manufacturer. We've been able to take an inverter methodology through the Zero Landfill project and basically use honeybee behavior to educate very smart people, architects, interior designers, et cetera, that this has value. And not only does it have value, it has value for the folks right across the street from your firm, the daycare, the Montessori school, the crafting group at the local YWCA. They are looking for these things, and they're willing to pay for them. And we've been able to make these connections mainly on an analog basis. The Austin project, which is referenced, is happening here. They did 30,000 pounds in Austin design firms last year, their first try, which was one of the highest launch projects we've ever had in Zero Landfill World. And it's simply by calling things a different name, reclassifying waste as an essential ingredient. And what the inverter can do is take us clear back to the point of manufacturer. So work with carpet manufacturers who want to know what their customers are doing with their product. Maybe it could even help a carpet manufacturer design a greener product. So if it does end up getting thrown away, it's less harmful. It's less bad. Water-based chemistry, all the things that can happen in product design, material extraction, material selection, through this tool that can be quantitative as well as qualitative, following our nine lessons of the honeybee, can really start to have an impact on changing manufacturers and decisions. The Forager is the same principle, where if our teacher in Cleveland, Ohio, who has $1 per student per year budget, and that's the budget for the Cleveland school system, imagine trying to run an art program for an entire year on $1 per student. That's what they get. Using a mobile app through Forager, they're able to find these sources locally and provide an amazing creative experience for their classroom and their students to be able to connect directly, if not to the specifier, the middleman in the city, maybe even connect right to the point of manufacture, so that when Interface Carpet has an overrun or a return of goods in Cleveland from a project, they don't have to be trucked back to Interface. They can be distributed right to the reading teachers in northeastern Ohio and Cleveland for reading circles for their kids to sit on, or for a nonprofit that can't afford new carpet. These are some of the powerful questions that we've answered through our work and our design work. And to us, the story is just as powerful as the data and the possibilities. We're for profit, by the way. We're interested in doing this work on a design basis, as well as whether it's a paid app or proprietary licensed app, to help support this change that needs to happen out there. So let's go back to the original question. Where does it go? Maybe you're thinking it's going someplace different. And if you took, in this case, honeybees, if a looking glass into the waste stream was available, and let's say it was honeybees, their complex vision and the way that they see and sense things and communicate it, in the case of the waste stream, and think about other systems as well, the embedded value really becomes visible. It could be measured in BTUs. Plastic waste has the highest BTU content out of the entire waste stream. And we throw it away. Last year, we threw away 93 million tons of plastic landfilled. That's all high-value energy that we're sticking underground. Or you can look at the beauty of it. Maybe carpet doesn't have to go in a landfill. It can be used for sculpture classes to stabilize sculpture. Or fabrics can be used for scrapbooking. It doesn't have to be thrown away at the end of its useful life. When a factory discontinues things, when they do a line drop or a line change or the trends change, this stuff gets thrown away. We see it differently. So the embedded value can become more visible using these tools that are based on our nine lessons, and then you can create new value chains. So you can start to disrupt on a local level. And again, it's that idea of a director of a Montessori school using a communication application to go right to the source, Interface in Dalton, Georgia, and say, hey, I'm doing a new building. Do you have anything left over that I could use? And The vision says Interface has goods right down the street for you in a warehouse that they've been trying to get rid of. So it can create new value chains, new associations, and new connections. And then you get into behavior shifts and the hyper-efficiency of behavior shifts. So manufacturers maybe aren't sending as much stuff out to be evaluated. Or maybe their disposition strategy that they train their field representatives and their sales teams can be different. We've seen that in Zero Landfill over and over, where salespeople are telling us, I handle samples differently now because I've worked at a Zero Landfill project and I see the sin of this industry, how much stuff we throw away. It's crazy. So, again, through the bee's eyes, you see things a little bit differently. And when you start to apply some of the needs of the community to it, it really gets human fast. And why is this important to us here at South by Southwest? Because South by Southwest and the attendees and the industry that we're all part of are already acting like bees in a lot of ways. Because bees do three things very well, and it's what users of social media and interactive media do very well. And they tell us over and over. They seek, whether it's information, connections, stuff, ideas, relationships. They seek it. They browse it with a tool, an application, and then they brag about it. Look at the growth. A year ago, Instagram and Pinterest did not exist, I don't think. It wasn't a presence at South by Southwest that I remember. Look what's happened in a year. 2 years ago, there were no iPads at South by Southwest. So social media and highlight and all the things that are happening right now are very important to the consumer who is buying and using these items. And they're acting just like bees. And that's been our experience since day one with Zero Landfill. These folks act just like my honeybees at home. That was the inspiration and the aha moment. So maybe there's ways to discover organizing principles for your own work, your own projects, your clients. If you're a developer, a designer, fill in some blanks. You can have ours. These aren't ours. These are everybody's. These just happen to be what one system in nature uses over and over. Discover your organizing principles. Read the book Biomimicry. Go to a certification course. You can go to biomimicry.org and find classes all over the United States to become certified as a designer. But really look right outside the window, because I think the inspiration may be a lot closer than you think. And as we've seen ourselves, just by taking a look and paying a little more attention to something that we tend to overlook, which is pollinators in our case, there's a lot of wisdom there. Thank you for coming. I'd be happy to take questions. If you want to step up to the mic, I was instructed to use the microphones because it's podcasting. This is a podcasting moment. Any questions? Did I have my bee facts right, Carl? Yes.
I'm just curious if you know anything about possible market for landfill mining. I've heard some things about that. It does. I'd like to know more about what you know about that.
Yeah, landfill mining is nothing new. It's actually been going on a long time, but there's now an organized effort using technology, and there's some proprietary technologies. There's some folks in Michigan that are taking old mining equipment and retrofitting it to go into soft soils of landfills and uncap them. As metal and alloy prices have climbed, there are metals being pulled out of landfills now, back from before the days things were scrapped. So yeah, it's going on now. It's not going on at scale, but if you think about a landfill operator, here's the dichotomy of landfill world. Landfills are governed by volume. They're licensed, permitted, and managed by cubic yards. Tipping fees are governed, which is the charge that they charge for a truck to come in and dump in a landfill. That's how they make their money. Tipping fees are governed by weight. So if you're managing your hole in the ground by space and your economic model is based on weight, so the truck's coming in, what's the last thing you want in the truck? The lightest thing you can put in a landfill, plastic. Plastic has two things going for it, and it's also two things that work against it. Plastic is very durable, and it has memory, and it's very lightweight. So if you put a crushed water bottle in a landfill, it will attempt over the next, whatever the half-life is of PET, thousands of years, it will attempt to return to its original molded form over time. And you get enough of that going on, like a roll of carpet that gets bent in half in a landfill, over time, that's going to return to its original shape because that's how the hydrocarbons and molecules were formed in the carpet fiber. So if I'm a landfill operator, I don't want any plastic in my landfill because it's going to create a very inefficient hole in the ground for me. And if I'm a trucker paying landfill fees, I want to bring a lot of plastic to the landfill, but the landfill operator is not going to make as much money. The economics aren't right. So it's a good argument for taking away polymer completely from landfills, and that's where you're going to see a lot of people going into landfills to get polymer out. Again, the highest BTU level of the waste stream is plastic. And the one case study I referenced, Polyflow, is exactly why that technology is ready to be commercialized. Great question, though. It's happening. Any other questions? David. The business model? Yeah, it's licensing. It's licensing. Our original business model when we launched 2 years ago was to create an online marketplace for goods, kind of like a Amazon for trash. There's a lot of people doing that, and several are successful. As a biomimetic-inspired company, that's too me too for us. And we saw that the 9 lessons were probably being wasted under that kind of a me too model of an online marketplace. And we're more focused on developing innovative apps, licensing opportunities, the things that you can do in mobile world now that didn't even exist a year ago. It's changing so fast, as we all know. Our go-forward business case is around that, development consulting, proprietary software. Hope to have it to show you at next year's South by Southwest. And let's call in. Do you have it ready? You want to bring it up? Put him on the spot. Okay, I'm going to let you go back out and play in the rain. Thank you for coming today. Think like a bee. Find your champion in nature. Thank you.